Hello and welcome to the True Below A podcast. My name is Jacob Birch. With me, as always, is Eric Steven. Eric.
Hello.
Earlier in the Dodgers season, we've been waiting for something to happen for a while now. Dodgers have been missing a key part of their ball club, I think, and that is for Chavez and Josh Raven to pitch yes. in the same game.
Oh, it's one of the greatest moments in baseball history happened on Monday night. The Dodgers were well ahead of the Diamondbacks, and Jesse Chavez was pitching in the eighth inning, and as always is the case when he comes in, I like to tease the next pitcher, who I think we all know who it should be, and that should be Josh Raven, because first of all, before Jesse Chavez, there'd never been a Chavez pitch for the Dodgers, so like they're getting a Chavez to pitch at Chavez Ravine.
Has there been a Jesse?
Great question.
Putting you on the spot.
Yeah. No. Maybe in Brooklyn?
I'm going to start looking up while you keep talking about your pitchers.
But yeah, so Josh Raven, that's the thing. It's pronounced Raven, but, you know, for poetic license, it's Ravine. Yeah, and sure enough, he came in. He's warming up in the eighth. I'm all excited, and then he comes into the ninth. So they had back-to-back Chavez and Ravine, as it were, and it was pretty awesome. And
So twice now, Eric has tried to keep talking about the Chavez-Ravin experience, and twice now my computer has crashed. So I've cleared the cobwebs, but I do think it's a sign that we need to move on, Eric. Are you comfortable with that? I know you and I were talking, you wanted to dedicate a full bonus episode to it.
But. Right. Yeah, I think it seems a fair assessment. Than, you know, rather than say 90 minutes, we'll spend 90 seconds on
okay.
it. So that's fine.
What I was alluding to when we started the show is Clayton Kershaw scheduled to pitch a Major League Baseball game.
Wait, when?
What?
Yeah.
Stop the presses. I got to write an article.
When I reviewed our pre-show notes, as we often go through, it just said left-handed pitcher returning. I assumed it was Scott Kazmir.
Well, you were wrong, friend.
Yeah.
So. Friday against Miami in Miami. Scheduled to start. Had a rehab assignment, which is just like, I thought it might have been in AAA, but it was in A-ball in Rancho. How unfair to A-ball hitters.
Well, the best part of that is, like, so he did that in 2014 when he was on the DL. He had one start in Rancho and one start in Chattanooga in AA. And the guy actually homered off him in the A-ball game. So, like, it's one of those things, like, you know, baseball is baseball at a certain level. Like, if you run into a fastball or something, you're going to, you know, think good things could happen. But that said, not too many good things happened for the I think they were playing San Jose and Modesto, that's what it was. And he allowed, I think, one hit, and it was like
picked up immediately on a double play, I think.
Yeah, it was an infield dribbler too that, like, it's like the guy was barely safe on, and so Kershaw was pretty dominant. But you gotta
think he asked to keep that ball.
Of course. Yeah, why wouldn't you? It's like, but on some level, if you're those players, though, that gives you like a good, it's either a sobering reminder that of what's to come, or like, this is what we have to work up to, you know, like the rest of the season is going to be easy now because we don't have to face this guy. But
they get to face Brett Anderson immediately after.
Yeah, right. And Brandon McCarthy did not have a good rehab assignment on
either. Yeah,
on Monday. But like, it's one of those things. Like, you know, often with rehab assignments, it's like I hardly ever pay attention to the results.
Yeah, it could be that the curveball is what's bothering you, so you have to throw it way too often, and then it's just sort of an unfair assessment, which is what I told my family when they were asking about Kershaw. So I'm like, don't expect anything, doesn't mean anything. And then, of course, he, I think, strikes out five in 40 pitches or whatever.
He was like as dominant as you would expect. But like, yeah, and so he's going to pitch on Friday in Miami, and everything kind of lines up like the way they're setting things up now. You can tell, like, so Kershaw, Hill and Maeda are going against the Marlins.
That sounds a lot better than what we've been having over the course of August.
They've had a fill-in rotation. Yeah. Like, and the rookies and everything, they've done well, you know, relatively. But, like, you know,
You have a month of that and you're thinking this is a playoff team, and you're, what is the playoff rotation going to look like? Is Brock Stewart going to be pitching game three? And you start to get worried. Just because you haven't seen the pieces that you're hoping to be sort of complete that puzzle.
Yeah, and so this gives them sort of time to get those guys sort of ready for the playoffs. Because Rich Hill, I mean, as we're looking at, he's only pitched two games for the Dodgers, really, and then since July 7th. And then Kershaw has pitched zero games since June 26th. So they're both basically like in getting ready mode. And Rich Hill's been great, two six-inning scoreless starts. So you could tell, and all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, that's why they traded for Rich Hill.
Yeah.
And it's like, so now they have Kershaw, Hill, and then you followed up with Maeda, who's been like, you know, quietly like really good. And then that's your three, and then you just figure out who's the fourth. It's probably going to be the aforementioned Scott Kazmir. In a perfect world, like I was sort of outlining this, like, Andrew Friedman mentioned last week, like, the Urias is hitting it, gonna hit his innings limits, and he's probably going to the bullpen, and if he's in the playoff roster, it's going to be in the bullpen. But like for me, like, Urias has been pitching so well that, like, I if there's enough left in the tank, I think he's a guy who's like perfect to be like their game four starter three times, basically. You know, like, that's all you ask of him in the playoffs.
You know,
like,
you're looking at 15 to 18 innings probably at most.
Yeah, and like, look, you can even have a short hook on him with their bullpen they have, like, and, you know, let him get through five really strong innings or whatever. But he's been really good, like, and not just like good for a rookie, like, he's been like, he was, I mean, they were hurting in Cincinnati. They needed like any length out of the starter. He gave him six scoreless. His next start out, he pitched another six innings. Like, he like held them together when they needed it, like an actual, like, you know, really good stopper would do. You know, hell, he's only 20, but like he's like a perfect candidate for me to be like the game four starter. But I understand why they're not going to do it, but that's what I would do. But the most important thing is that, look, they're getting Kershaw back, and it's like Kershaw, Hill, Maeda. That's what they're going to roll with. They both, like, that works out to face the Giants, at least the home series against the Giants. And then I believe if they wanted to, they could also work that out to face all three of them to face the Giants.
But the division will be clinched by then, so.
We don't want to get ahead of ourselves. But I'll find
some wood to knock on.
Yeah, exactly. So, if they had to, those three could also pitch that final series, I'm sure.
You and I were talking before we got started that last week Dodgers went 3-3, but it felt a lot better. Like, most of that's the timing. They ended on a really high note with a lot of, not just winning games, but a lot of high notes. And Andrew Tolzy, as he's known affectionately, just looking incredible with the key grand slam in Colorado, with the Dodgers coming back from six runs back.
Yeah, like, you look at last week, it could have been like really bad. Like, they were.
I admit, I gave up on that game, the last Colorado game. I mean, was like, whatever, I'm gonna go do some errands.
Well, if you remember, like, so, like, I was sort of mad too, because not just the just the way we recorded last Tuesday, and it was the middle of that series, and they almost got shut out on Monday. It was 8-1, and they scored like in the ninth, and the Dodgers did, to avoid the shutout, which is super rare at Coors, obviously. And then we recorded on a Tuesday, and it was like they were going to play. And like for me, from a personal standpoint, my days off from editing are Monday and Tuesday. So like, and they're on the road. So like, I could have like done something on Tuesday night, but there was like it was so funny the way the rain delay happened, because there was rain in the area, but they didn't think any much of it. And so they start the broadcast, and Joe Davis is like, it was like literally within seconds, he's like, it's a beautiful day and cool, and then like within like a second it started raining, like as he's like introducing the podcast. or the broadcast, not the podcast. And as Tyler Anderson was warming up for the first inning, they pretty much did the rain delay, and but it was like a gradual rain delay, like, hey, we could still play tonight, and then we're gonna show, like, they showed the Lasorda Chronicles, which on Sportsnet LA, it's a documentary. It's a 4-part documentary, and they started with part one, and they got through all of it, and it was like the rain delay lasted over 2.5 hours before they called the game. So, like, essentially, like, they took up the time of a game without playing a game on Tuesdays. So it effectively, like, if they would have just said, hey, we have Tuesday off, that's much greater for someone with a day off. But anyway, I digress. So they played Wednesday, and then that shutout they were chasing on Monday, they got it on Wednesday. they got shut out in the first game of a doubleheader, and then they were like, they're losing badly in the nightcap, and like, look, they're going to get swept by a pretty bad Rockies team. Like, look, they thought they were on the verges of sort of contention at the All-Star at the end, after the All-Star break, when they got hot, but they're still not that good. And like, you're just like, oh, this is terrible. They can't score in Coors Field, and they're down 6-8 to 2 in the eighth inning, and like, nobody could hit. So you're like, well, this is bad. And I think at the time, I think a loss would have dropped their lead to a half game that night. So it was, you know, all the sort of goodwill you built up, you're trying to build the lead, and then it's almost all gone because of this terrible series. And then so they score, like, they rally a little bit in the eighth. They score 3 runs, and it's 8-5, and you're like, all right, still whatever. And then still, then they start in the ninth, and then they get a little bit of a rally going, but then there's 2 outs, and then it comes up, like, Josh Reddick, this is August 31st, and they acquired him on August 1st, and it took his final at-bat of August to drive in his first run as a Dodger. That's how bad of an opening month he had. But it was a 2-out single in the ninth, and that made the game 8-6, and there was still bases loaded. And that brought up Andrew Tolles, who's been, like, super hot, you know, just in very limited duty. And sure enough, it was funny because the first pitch, it was, like, I think it was a pretty obvious ball, but, like, it was called a strike, and the camera, like, showed Tolles, and he mouthed, like, for lack of a better word, WTF is what he mouthed. And he was like, and then the next pitch, he just murdered it. Like, he went opposite field. He's a lefty. He said he thought he flew out at first, but, like, he did a little, like, Sammy Sosa hop out of the batter's box. I was watching the replay of that. But, like, yeah, he hit it very well, and then it went out, and then grand slam to give them a 10-8 lead and win. So that really, and then they ended up winning 2-3 over the weekend against the Padres. So they, you know, like you said, 3-3 week, but, like, man, it could have been a lot worse. And, like, you know, things.
And especially when the lows came in Coors Field, where lows always seem to come. It's just, like, it seems like twice a season I mutter the phrase, well, at least we're not playing there anymore. Like, just never, not a lot of, some great comebacks there. No hitter there. But for the most part, I just never happy things happen in Coors Field.
You're going to deal with weather. You're always going to have, you're going to have to, like, it affects your pitching staff, like, before and after. You're going to want extra people, basically. You know, and then in just bad luck in recent years, not this year so much, but in recent years, the Dodgers have gotten people hurt there. Like, you know, Puig ran into a wall. Matt Kemp famously, like, jacked up his shoulder there by running into the wall. A lot of people have gotten hurt in Coors Field. And that's not to say it's Coors Field's fault, but it's like, you know, after a certain point, you're like, you just want to get out of there. Like, it's a grind to get through that series, but it made it extra frustrating because they couldn't score, and, like, you expect to go there and score a lot, especially with how this team has been hitting. They've been one of the better offensive teams basically since the All-Star break in baseball, so it was very shocking that they didn't hit. But then, like, they really used that the Grand Slam. They've been playing well since. And they built up a lead. And, like, the Giants are there now in Coors. And, like, they played a four-game series against the Cubs where they had a hard time hitting. But it was all four games were still one run. It was a very close series. They were, like, I think at the time, the stat was, like, they were hitting, like, 106. The Giants were hitting 106 in the four-game series. And they were like two or three outs away from splitting it because they had a ninth inning lead in game four. So that would have been like a big split for the Giants, but then they ended up losing that lead and then losing the game in extras in on Sunday. So then and then they went to Coors, and on Monday they got shut out on two hits. So like it's running rampant, this Coors. The Rockies they have some good young pitching now. And that's going to make them contenders in the future. They're not there yet, but they're definitely going to be around, hanging around a little bit. But yeah, the Giants now, as bad as the Dodgers slump was, the Giants are like they're really showing you what a real offensive slump is right now. It's kind of crazy.
Coming up week, obviously, I guess we'll talk. Do you want to talk about Greinke?
Yeah,
might as well. It was a pretty good game.
Yeah, so the Dodgers already you know lost to Greinke earlier in the year. They played in Phoenix. He was in LA obviously for the Dodgers home opener. He didn't pitch because it just didn't work out the that series. That's how it happens sometimes. And so he already got the boos during introductions, and that they got that out of the way. But this was his first pitching game at Dodger Stadium since leaving the Dodgers. So there was a lot of he got booed very soundly actually last night. You know, on some level you're like, you know, he was pretty great for 3 years. I don't know if you should be booing him, but then again he did leave. He knew what he was getting into. He kind of laughed, like
sure.
He had that Greinke smile kind of on his face as he was batting, getting the boos and stuff. He knows the deal. It's not his first rodeo. It was a pitcher's duel early. Scoreless, like Greinke had six strikeouts through three, Maeda had five, and then like the Dodgers, Adrian Gonzalez homered against them in the fourth, and they're like, okay, they have a lead, it's going to be a close game here, and then they just unloaded on him in the fifth. Jock Peterson hit a home run to dead center, giving him 20. He's had a nice year, especially after the way he sort of faded down the stretch last year. He's done nothing of the sort this year. Corey Seager followed with a three-run shot to essentially put the game away. And then Justin Turner and Yasmani Grandal both added one later. And so five home runs against Greinke, something he's never done. And then the Dodgers had four in the inning. So they really pounded them, and you know, it was hard to see that coming. But you know, for the fans like there, and who was because Greinke got to do the walk of shame because he is lifted with two outs in the fifth. So the fans got like everything they wanted in that game. They got to boo him as he's walking off, and you know, cheer as the Dodgers are ahead. And it was just pretty good night at Chavez Raven last night.
Stop it. Gonna make the computer fall apart again.
That's right. Sorry.
So they finishing the series with Arizona, and then they go to Miami where Kershaw will start the Friday game. Overall, you know, not the scariest week. Miami's pretty good, but when you're leading off with Kershaw, you have to feel pretty good about it. Dodgers put themselves four games ahead of the Giants yesterday with the win against Greinke. So you have to feel like you really want this week to be a week where they're padding that lead, especially with how bad the Giants have been playing, and hope to make the series against the Giants maybe not meaningless, but at the same time not too fretful.
Yeah, the perfect scenario is going into that final weekend with like nothing to play for.
Yeah,
really. And it could be either way, like because if you look at it now, so they have a four game lead on the Giants. But the Dodgers, they're also like, they're only three games back of the Nationals for the like number two seed in the NL, which would, like with the Mets last year, it would mean the Dodgers would get home field because they right now it's going to – I mean, the Cubs are going to win like
– pretty good this year.
Yeah. So the Cubs are going to get the wild card team. So it's going to be Dodgers Nationals in the first – if both win their divisions. So it's a matter – and if and the Dodgers have – they won 5 out of 6 from them. So if they tie, the Dodgers get home field. So they only have to – tie the Nationals, so they're 3 games back. So that's definitely doable over the last like 4 weeks. So that's something to shoot for as well. But yeah, we'll see how it goes going into the last couple weeks.
Well, you ready for some Vin Scully trivia?
Sure.
For those of you just joining us on this segment, our friend Craig Manami has been sending me trivia questions related to the Vin Scully era, aka half of the era, half of the Dodgers' life, from 1950 to today. Various trivia questions, and today, with the Yankee series oncoming, not this week, but the week after, Dodgers will be going to Yankee Stadium, so probably be in the middle of the series when we record again. So these are all questions about the eight World Series between the Dodgers and the Yankees. Now I've got four of them. You ready?
Yeah.
Who is the Brooklyn Dodger leader in home runs against the Yankees?
I'm pretty sure it's Duke Snider.
You are correct. Duke Snider with 10. Yeah. Who is the L.A. Dodger leader in home runs against the Yankees?
Oh. Well, so you're talking 77, 78, and 81. Oh, and 60. There's also 63. No one did all four. Well, you know what?
I'll give you a hint. There's more than one answer.
Okay. Okay, so I'll say Steve Garvey and Davey Lopes.
You got one of those right. Davey Lopes, Steve Yeager, and Reggie Smith. Each had four.
I almost went with Reggie Smith. I know the only reason I said Lopes is because he had the 2-home run game in 78, and I thought he mixed in at least one more that series. So okay, good.
Which Dodger stole the most bases against the Yankees?
Let's see. Let's go with Jackie Robinson.
Davey Lopes with 8.
Duh.
Which L.A. Dodger had the most RBI against the Yankees?
I'll go back to Garvey.
You're in the infield. Ron Say with 13.
Okay.
And there you go.
That's a pretty good set of questions.
Yeah, I'm sure those will probably come up starting next week. So for all you listeners, you're prepared with some Dodgers trivia of your own. Now, do you have a play index for us? I asked you this before we started, and you kind of threw off a maybe.
Yeah. I'll say yes, I do.
Okay. What is it?
One of the home runs, the last home run last night, was Yasmani Grandal, who has a career high in home runs this year. He has 24, all of them as a catcher. He's leading baseball in home runs by a catcher this year, but he homered on Saturday and he homered on Sunday as well. So, with that in mind, my question to you is: there's two questions. First one is: who is the last Dodger catcher to hit a home run in 3 consecutive games?
Okay. Russell Martin.
That is correct.
Hey, all right.
Yeah. In 2007, from May 30th to June 1st.
I seem to remember him having like one really hot spot in his time here. So.
Yeah, and then the other part of that is so the record, at least dating back to 1913, which I would guess is, well, it's actually also the record because this is the franchise record. The record for most consecutive games of the home run is 5 by anyone. but also one of the people who have that record is a catcher. Do you know who that is?
Restate the question, please.
Okay. So the Dodgers
buying time, if you haven't noticed.
Sure. Dodgers franchise record for consecutive games with a home run is 5 by any player, and it's held by like multiple people. One of them is a catcher. Can you name the catcher?
Roy Campanella.
That is correct.
Yeah, I think this is the first time I've gotten on both.
The
Piazza was tempting, but
when I said there's 2, I actually meant 3 because I'm gonna give you one more. Grandal's at 3, and Campanella's at 5. Can you name the last Dodger catcher to do 4 straight games with a home run?
Mike Piazza.
Almost.
Ah.
So he is the second to last one, but the last one was Todd Hundley in 2010.
Okay. That was not going to be a guess of mine, so I'm glad we didn't play that game.
he's a go-to, though, for like
Dodger. No, he certainly should be, but he's just...
Yeah,
it passes my memory so easily.
Yeah. And then the immortal Duke Sims, 1971, also did 4 straight. And Campanella had 2 different streaks of 4 straight. So, yeah, he's pretty good, it turns out.
Ready for some Twitter questions?
Yep.
You're tweeting, they're Twittering. Brandon Johnson asks, the Giants have been pretty awful since the All-Star break. Is it because Seager was in the Home Run Derby? Yes.
Yep,
absolutely.
Good question. Yeah.
Thank you, Corey.
He messed up their swing.
Yeah. I love how you can just make up false narratives, you know, just mixing stuff up.
Right.
Mijo, I think that's Miho? Miho. I'm going to say
Maybe.
Miho.
Yeah, I think Miho.
Miho. How long does Adrian Gonzalez have with the Dodgers, and is there a prospect in waiting?
Yes. Gonzalez is under contract through the 2018 season, so 2 more years after this. But then also the prospect in waiting is a very good one, and Cody Bellinger, who he had a very good year as one of like the youngest players in the Texas League. And
how old is he?
He's 20. Yeah, it's pretty crazy, and like. You know, at the end of the year, you know, the minor league rosters can get a little screwy at the end of the year. Like, some teams are preparing for the playoffs, and then also they lose all their best players to the major. So, like, the rotations are screwed, and you know, in a lot of cases, like, although it's weird this week, like, Jose De Leon, Brock Stewart, in a lesser case, Urias, he hasn't been there in a while. But, like, they're all in the majors. So, like, Oklahoma City's in the playoffs. They don't have those guys. Trevor Oakes, like, had a groin strain. So he's, like, questionable. I'm not sure if he's going to start. But they're going to have Scott Kazmir in a rehab game start game one of their playoff series against the Nashville Sounds. And, Jarrell Cotton would have started one of those games, maybe the first game, because he's been pitching, like, lights out for them. And he got called up to the majors. He's going to start on Wednesday, make his major league debut for the A's. So, it's funny how these things get sort of turn around. But anyway, back to Bellinger. So he was in Double-A Tulsa, one of the youngest players in the Texas League. By most accounts, ranked top anywhere from like top 25 to like top 50. In national lists, like depending on some of the rankings, like Baseball America, I think tends to be higher on him. But Baseball Prospectus, MLB.com, ESPN, they all have him pretty high. And so at the end of the year, the one AAA called him up for a couple games to sort of fill in, just because they needed some help. And he played 3 games with them. He started the last 2 and. He's 6-for-11 with 3 home runs. So, welcome to AAA. He's very good. And he's like really athletic. Supposed to be good first baseman defensively. Very good swing, but also he plays a little bit in the outfield. They mixed him around in the outfield, even in center. Not sure he can play that in the majors, but just the fact that he's sort of doing it is like, you know, it shows you the athleticism. So it's one of those cases. Bellinger's like a for sure September call up next year, if not, you know, before, like if they needed someone. But it's a case where, you know, Gonzalez probably not going anywhere. So you see a scenario where if Bellinger's like plays well enough to like force his way onto the roster, he probably starts off as an outfielder, and then just sort of, you know, they move him around as needed, that sort of thing. That's my guess on that. But that's sort of their situation at first for the time being.
And 2 years is the nice amount of time to where you're going to let him develop fully. You'll really have a much firmer idea of what you got, and then you're making the decision on whether or not Gonzalez will depart the Dodgers after his contract's done a lot easier at that point.
Yeah, in an ideal situation, like he spends next year developing, gets a cup of coffee in September, maybe has a chance to make the team as not a Ben Zobrist type, I don't want to say, but like your fourth outfielder, or maybe with a third outfielder in 2018, and so he and Gonzalez are both on the team, or you know, something like that, and then he takes over, you know, at the end. But you know, a lot of weird things can happen in this game. Like, it's so far out, like, as we've seen just with the injuries this year. Gonzalez has been one of the, you know, most consistent like players in terms of health and you know, playing time. But that said, everyone gets older, and you know, father time's undefeated, so you never know on something like that.
Blue Man asks, rank the pending Dodgers free agents in terms of priority: Jansen, Turner, Hill, Reddick, Utley.
See, okay, so I think of the five, probably Reddick is the least like prioritized, maybe.
Right. Probably take him, but you know.
Yeah, I think they'll probably, like, you know, you have the five, like they want to, they could probably re-sign all five, but not, you know, probably won't re-sign all five. But like, I'd say at least probably fourth, just because of age and, you know, et cetera. That said, he's probably the easiest to re-sign in that it's just going to be another 1 year deal, you know, that kind of a thing. So it would be an easy sort of return engagement with him, if they wanted to. And then Rich Hill is sort of, you know, they like everything about him. He's really good when he's on the mound. It's a matter of, you know, getting him there. But that said, that's why they could probably get him at a relatively discounted rate.
And the Dodgers front office have definitely shown willingness to put in a little bit extra cash for those type of players.
Yeah, so like I have no idea what the numbers would be, but like I've seen rumors and stuff just elsewhere where, like, I don't know, what is he, like, 2 and 25? I mean, he signed a 1 year $6 million deal based on 4 starts last year, so 4 really good starts, and then this year, like, his ERA, he has a 1.94 ERA right now, so on the season in 16 starts, I guess 15 real starts. But you know, that kind of production, you're willing to, if you're only going to get 20 to 25 starts of it, you know, it's still worth that kind of money. So there, and he's, like I said, he's 36, so no spring chicken. But I'd probably put him, I mean, it's someone who they'd look to re-sign. I don't know where the priority lies. I mean, just to have a for sure number two guy behind Kershaw, I think, you know, given the rest of the rotation, like, you know, various degrees, like, they're all pretty good, but to have that certain, like, you know, this is our number two guy, he's probably up there. I'd say I would prioritize, I think, Jansen over Turner, but I don't know what the front office will do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, both are pretty important, I think, to, you know, Turner, for many reasons, his production, you know, on the field, obviously, but also by many accounts is like one of the leaders in the clubhouse. And, you know, you don't want to like let everyone go. I would imagine, if I had to guess, so like just putting in order, like Jansen, maybe Turner, Hill, Utley, Reddick. I could be swayed though on switching like Hill and Turner, maybe. But it's I think they try to the one that's most likely to resign, in my opinion, is Hill.
But we'll see. Doesn't mean they're going to make the other guys less of a priority. I just think he's the easiest one to resign of all of them. Or I guess Utley would be. But I think he'll have a good chance coming back.
Sergio asks, what kind of contract would Justin Turner, be looking at if the Dodgers re-sign him? We've talked about this a couple of times, and our basic answer was we have no idea.
11 years, $378 million.
It's right? a pretty weak free agent class.
Yeah.
So those always lead to very sort of unpredictable free agent signings.
Yeah, if you're like the clear like top hitter or one of the top hitters, like it really, if it just comes down to like, you know, these three teams need a bat, and then that there's your market, like. And you're going to get a nice little bidding war for yourself and get a nice, you know, an inflated contract, you know, over, say, what you might have gotten otherwise. But, like, that said, you know, yeah, Turner is going to be – he's going to be an attractive free agent out there. Like, I don't know how you sort of nip that in the bud and try to sign him early. I can't imagine them like giving him like a 6-year deal, you know, something like that. But I don't even know where his market is. Like is it 480? Like has he hit himself into that sort of stratosphere? Like it's hard to say, you know, like he had the knee surgery and he's fully healthy and this is going to be like his first full season. So it's hard to say like, you know, what to expect going forward because part of it's opportunity and part of it's health in the past. So you don't really know exactly what to expect. It's a tough gauge. Like it's probably like, I don't know, 4 years, $70 million maybe is something, or but it could be like 480 if someone said.
And this isn't including options and all sorts of things that
he's going to get. Like if someone said he's going to get $18 to $20 million a year, $20 million a year, I'd be like, oh, okay, good. You know, that makes sense. Like and then sometimes there's markets where someone just like doesn't. You know, maybe his market doesn't pan out. Like, maybe he only signs for like 4 years and like $55 million or something like that. I'm just making numbers up, but it's hard to say. Like, so I don't really know.
Well, we'll find out. But you know, one thing we didn't mention is that reigning World Series champion adds a little bit to the price tag. So,
well, and World Series, you could say like World Series MVP as well.
In the we're happy to be your Google department, Nurse Bailey asks, what is a camel's hairbrush made of?
Oh, so the reason she asks is a good sort of intro from her. Vin Scully on, I think it was Sunday.
I was watching this. I missed like, that one, but.
He's like, you know what? He's like, I got some trivia for you guys. and it was just like this random stuff. Like, he's like, no, it's not going to be like who's buried in Grant's tomb. And then he's like asking, he literally asked that question about the What is it? What is that Persian's something?
What is a camel's hair brush made of? Camel hair brush.
And he gave the answer, and I don't remember what it was.
According to what I have found, it's made of hair from pony, ox, goat, squirrel, and other animals.
Yeah, but not a camel. I think his answer was the squirrel, like something. So, it was pretty great. Like, how long was the Hundred Years' War?
What color is the black box? I got that one right. The one he said you would get right.
Okay, it was like a constant string of like these non sequitur trivia questions. It was pretty great. So that's sort of the origin behind that.
Mike S. asks, as our last question, at this point, how do you think we compare with the 2008 and 2009, 2013, 14, and 15 Dodgers, okay, the playoff teams, or the 08, 09 Phillies?
Well, the Dodgers have more 08 and 09 Phillies than they do 08 and 09 Dodgers, so they might actually... it's weird. Like, I don't know. Like, it always depends on how you play in October. Like,
yep.
it could change in like a heartbeat. Like, it doesn't matter how you play down the stretch usually, you know, because it literally, as soon as the bell rings in October, your one little misstep can completely screw you over. Or like, you know, you lose your opening game and then all of a sudden you're behind the eight ball and I don't know, things just don't work out. But like, you know, some of those, like the Dodgers team, like in 08, they swept the Cubs in the first round, I think. And that Cubs team won like, I think they won like 97 games or something. Like they were a good, they were like the best team in the National League, I think, that year. But the Dodgers like had Manny and the Cubs like had trouble hitting right-handed pitching, and the Dodgers threw like all strong right-handed pitching against them. It just worked out. And then like the next year they swept the Cardinals, in part because the Cardinals were about to get a split in game two, but Matt Holliday could not catch an easy fly ball and took it off the junk instead. So like, you know, I don't know. It's crazy, like how things happen, and then you look like, you know, recent years. The Dodgers were better than the Cardinals in 2014, but then like, and they had a 6-1 lead, and then they had Kershaw gave up the big inning. Like that kind of really set the tone for that series, and also the lack of bullpen, like, and then all of a sudden they're done in four games. The year before, the NLCS, that's the only time they got to the NLCS in this sort of run. It's hard to really say, like, but that said, like, this year has everything you would want in theory going for, like, so the team has showed like amazing resiliency in the face of crazy adversity. Like Kershaw's been out, Ethier's been out all year. They've had injuries galore, and they still played very well with a numerous like cast of characters. Jock Peterson not fading down the stretch. He's someone you can actually play. Yasmani Grandel's healthy. He's not facing shoulder surgery, so he's a very productive part of your lineup right now. This like compared to last year. Kershaw gonna have fewer innings on his arm going into October, so he's gonna be like the absolute freshest he's ever been. It's just a matter of if these last few starts are enough for him to sort of get back into the groove. Probably think they are. So they're as looking as good as can be, I think, going into the playoffs, and it's just now they just have to, you know, actually do it. But I would put them on par with, I think they're good enough to get to the NLCS, and they're good enough to like take a series from the Cubs. The Cubs are clearly the best team in the league. There's no question about that. But I think the Dodgers can hang with them,
and you know, they can, they're good enough to get to the World Series. I mean, so it's just a matter of, you know, doing it. So, and even if they're the, even if you're the favorites, sometimes you you still don't do it. So they're not the, they're not going to be the favorites, I don't think. But you know, that said, you know, anything can happen. So but that's where I would sort of put them in terms of recent Dodger playoff teams.
Here to her first, Eric Steven guaranteeing a World Series win.
Yeah, that's pretty much
that's what I heard. And that's all we got. Any parting notes?
I don't think so.
Go Kershaw.
Yeah, we're just so by this time next week, we'll see Kershaw back. And I guess Friday, like you sort of mentioned, like it could be like a shortened start because he only threw three innings in his rehab game. He threw some in the bullpen too, but like I think they're gonna probably play it a little cautious. But that said, cautious, like he could end up like with like six scoreless innings or something, and then they're not going to pull him after like five or something. If he's going well, you know, they'll play it by ear, but I think they're probably going to be cautious with him. Well, and the reason it sort of comes up, he basically has five regular season starts left, and someone asked me this, so he's at 121 innings. He needs 41 innings to qualify for the ERA title, so that would be over, just over eight per start. And if he's going to go like five or six in the first one, he basically has to go, you know, near complete games the last four. I mean, he was pitching very deep into games earlier in the year, but to expect that, like, it's not going to happen. But you know, well, maybe next week that's what we talk about, is not necessarily him winning the ERA title, which he won't, but he could still sort of sneak in and have like the amazing short season Cy Young. That's still a possibility, I think, because no one's really run away with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think he would need to start every start here on out.
He needs to win like at least four of the five. Yeah. He needs to have, because if he's sitting at like 15-2 with a 1.7 ERA still, that's probably enough, especially with the gaudy strikeout to super low walk. If he could somehow not walk a batter the rest of the year and still have single digit walks, like, that would be amazing. But I'd rather just whatever it takes for him to be healthy. We could figure out the Cy Young stuff later, but I think there's still a chance for that to happen, but we'll see. But yeah, that's it for this week. Thanks for listening, everybody, and thanks for Jacob's computer lasting this long to record. Hopefully this is recorded, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thanks.
Bye-bye.